Happy New Year on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com alongside Lee DeKemper, also of JoeBucksFan.com, and we proudly present the custodian of Canton himself, Ira Kaufman. This award-winning podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. I said that right, Ira. Brandon.
Yes, you did.
Beautiful place, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Of course, they present all of your work on JoeBucksFan.com, your columns, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and your podcasts. And that's really where you want to start your search. Fantastic deals, fantastic opportunities, EdMorseCadillacTampa.com and EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Ira, we're going to go right to the game. Before we get into some of the bigger issues, of course, you wrote your takeaways, your 10 takeaways, but having a little more time to reflect Sunday's game, 9-7, your feelings on what that game meant.
Well, first, I thought it was a nice bounce-back game for the Buck defense, gentlemen, which, by the way, Dirk Cutter has informed us, finished number one in the league in third-down defense. That's a big statistic. Last year, they were awful. They were 30th. The jump from 30 to 1, that is quite a vault, Mr. DeKemper. So I got to give Mike Smith his props, pass rush, of course. Vernon Hargrave's impact can't be diminished. Quan Alexander played better this year. It was a good bounce-back game for that defense. While the offense was struggling all afternoon, I mean, you got to remember, all the Bucks had, Steve, was a field goal, offensively speaking, until that fourth quarter drive. The other score was on an interception return. Winston wasn't particularly sharp. Ground game was okay. I thought Mike Evans has had better days. They missed Cameron Brate. But throughout, the defense did its job. Now, having said that, Cam Newton had a bad year, gentlemen. Bad year for Cam Newton. They made him look bad.
All right, just screw Cam Newton, Ira.
Never mind that.
You wrote.
I'm saying that the defense left on a good note, and whether Mike Smith returns or not, they've got a nucleus to build on defensively in 2017.
You wrote in one of your, I think it was in your 10 takeaways or your column, I don't know. I read all of your work. It all runs together.
It all runs together.
You called out, and I want to get Lee's take on this as well, but Ira, you called out Brent Grimes as the top player, top performer on the Buccaneers defense this year.
I did.
You still stand behind that?
I do.
And
I think it's consistency from week to week. That I do stand by that, capped by a wonderful performance in the season finale. I thought I was worried about Grimes. I'll admit it. I didn't think he was particularly good in training camp. Who cares about training camp? Wasn't particularly sharp in the preseason. Who cares about that? Those games don't count. But when the bell rang for game one, I thought Grimes was there all season long. Everybody gets beat. I didn't think he got beat very often. He made a lot of plays, and I think he's a total pro. Miko, take a bow. Your man did very well.
Well, you could argue he won two games for the Bucs. Both against Carolina, mind you. On the road, he made that
fabulous play,
game-saving tackle on the goal line. And then did he get the pick afterwards?
Yeah, he got the pick on the next play. Yeah.
Then, of course, here Sunday, you know, he had that pick six when the offense was doing nothing.
And I know you boys are going to hit me with the middle linebacker with Quan Alexander, well, but I'm going to stand with Grimes.
I don't generally disagree with you the more I think about that. Yeah, of course, Quan had a great year. Of course, Gerald had another good year, despite what his detractors want to otherwise hear. The worst part about the Bucs defense last year was clearly the pass defense. Grimes comes in. Look what Grimes did. Look what the secondary did as a whole, led by Grimes. So you could make an argument he had the biggest impact on defense.
And the pass rush was a little better, Steve. It wasn't dramatically better. It was a little better.
So, oh, please, dramatically better? Of course not.
No, I'm saying it was not dramatically better.
Don't insult our hardcore listeners. And
so I, Bucks to back fans. Up Lee's point, the improvement in the secondary was significant, and I think Grimes was a big part of that.
All right, now since we're in off-season mode, Ira, let me push you on Grimes a little bit. He's got one more year left on the deal he signed here, signed a two-year contract. Now, Miko Grimes, I do listen to her podcast, I'll say that, and she makes it very clear that the Grimes family is in Tampa for the effing paycheck. She loves to say that and makes that very clear. While they love living here and that they really had a lot of respect for Mike Smith and they think Dirk Cutter is a great coach and Jameis and the organization and they wanted to be in Florida, she's made it clear many times they're here for the paycheck.
They're in good company. Darrell Revis is the same way.
So
he's going in the Hall of Fame.
But I ask you, though, Ira, do you should this administration look to extend Grimes one more year right now? Because you know what? If he's a free agent after next year and has another good year, he could be a component of a key playoff team, and then you lose him because we already sort of know he's going to go for the paycheck. What would you think about that?
You got 27 guys you want to extend over there, Isbits, and I'm a little more cautious. I understand your reasoning. I do. But, you know, Father Time at some point, Lee, is going to enter the picture. Grimes is an extraordinary athlete, keeps himself in top condition, hasn't lost much physically, which is remarkable at his age. But that, you know, corners are going to go quick, Lee. Maybe he'd become a third corner at that point. Maybe you move him to safety. I don't know how many years he can keep doing what he's doing at this level. I'd be a little hesitant, but I understand your point, Steve.
Gotcha.
I'm leaning toward yes, only because, and I know what you're saying. Don't disagree with what you're saying, Ira. But and everybody knows I'm a big Jason Light guy. So, and I know people in this building listen to this podcast. So it's not like I'm, you know, slurping here. But Jason Light threw a ton of money at a guy coming off back surgery who's never even freaking practiced. So you talk about a gamble. That's a bigger gamble than a guy who's actually producing on the field and you could argue is, if not the best player on defense, certainly one of the top three. I think that's a less of a gamble than what Jason Light did this past offseason with Mr. Sweezy.
I've also learned he's a heck of a pro, Steve. He's a good locker room guy.
Yes.
He minds his own business. He's okay to deal with from a media perspective. I got no problems with him. You ask him a question, he gives you a solid answer. I didn't know that much about Grimes, personally, before this season. I'm kind of impressed with him on and off the field.
Yeah, the coaching staff gave him a lot of credit for being there consistently and right away for Vernon Hargraves as a mentor and not just as a guy as a sounding board, but just also as somebody to watch because they're similar sizes and similar games, I think, even though Hargraves sort of never really let loose his athleticism this year.
Not much.
The ball skills, we didn't see that much. You're right, Steve.
You saw them in preseason.
Yes, you did. In preseason.
You didn't see a guy who just sort of let it loose. Like, he seemed so tentative. You know?
Oh, in practice, I remember last summer in practice, my gosh, did he let it loose. It was like, oh, I mean, are you a gymnast or something? His athletic ability is ridiculous. But to your point, you're right, Steve. He didn't really let loose in his season. Maybe because he was playing tight. I don't know. Maybe he was instructed not to. Maybe he was freelancing too much in practice, which displayed that athletic ability. I don't know, but it's odd that we saw it, but we didn't see it in the regular season.
Let me make another point here, Steve.
Please do, Ira.
On the other side of the ball.
It's your podcast.
Tell me if this is ironic or whether you could have anticipated this. It has been suggested on our website by you two gentlemen, I believe suggested, implied, that maybe Dirk Koetter at times in 2015 was inhibited slightly by not being the head coach and having Lovie Smith looking over his shoulder in terms of play calling and whatever,
and
the thrust of the offense, the focal points. Now he takes over the offense, nobody to answer to, really, except Buck fans and Joe Buck's fan. And I said it to him today. I put it as simply as I could. There was slippage in the offense. There was slippage. Now, here we're talking about the defense making a lot of strides, which they did, especially the second half of the season. He talked about the injuries to the running backs. I think there's more to the story. I don't think Jameis improved markedly as a sophomore. Not markedly.
No.
The offensive line took a step back, I thought. Even with the emergence of Cameron Brait, Steve, I thought the offense slipped a little bit. It's right there in black and white, running game being the prime example.
I'll throw out two names for you, and this should answer any doubts that you have about why the offense may have slipped. Josh Huff and Bernard Reedy.
Wow.
Being personal here, but when those guys were on the street in November, Reedy himself had a noble profession of transporting grandmothers in wheelchairs to doctor's appointments. And when you're counting on those guys for pass production, what can I say?
That's the first time Bernard Reedy's had his name mentioned on this podcast, Steve,
perhaps
the last time.
He should be honored. You said black and white. I'll point to velvet. And that's not a color, but when
we are going here.
But we're talking
about
the band. We're talking about Freddie Martino. I think the smart point, Ira, goes back to One of your columns, again.
Again.
Sage wisdom. Sage
the touchstone.
Wisdom.
The touchstone of it all.
I like that.
All
right,
calm down, calm down. You wrote so beautifully and did the research that last year Cutter ran exactly as much as he did this year.
I believe it was 28 carries.
28 carries a game. So I think that very, when I read that, I actually thought it debunked the thought process that, well, Lovey was had a big hand in the offense. The guy ran the same number of running plays, and the offense this year was hardly innovative by any stretch. Now, Cutter will tell you, "Hey, man, look at what I'm working with.
I got
to play to my garbage here."
Exactly.
But still, we went through the whole season, no trick play, no flea flicker, no nothing, no not even a hint.
And you're not saying do three a game.
No, even the hint of a gadget. Which I thought was interesting. The guy's got all this freedom, and we've seen, I remember in training camp, seeing Charles Sims throw some passes, and other guys didn't use it. I don't really remember even much of other unique kinds of play calling. And this final game, we saw, I believe it was 5 wide receiver screens out. The third, fourth, and fifth one didn't work. It ran the same play to the left side.
Constantly yesterday, yeah.
Constantly. We don't throw slant passes. Those disappeared.
And by the way, I'll interject real quick. Mike Evans ran a slant pattern yesterday, wide flipping open over the middle on a slant pass. Why Jameis didn't throw it to him, I don't know. But I saw it, and I was like, did I just see things? I looked at the replay. Sure enough, he ran a slant pattern, and he was open. They had a beautiful matchup against a short linebacker.
Steve, you know, one aspect I think is going to loom very, very large in the offseason, and Buck fans are going to be happy about this. But when Cutter breaks down the film and the numbers, I think one thing is really sticking in Cutter's mind, and it's bothering him quite a bit. Yards after the catch has been abysmal.
Yeah.
Now, look, I might vote for Mike Evans on my All-Pro team on Wednesday when I send it into Associated Press. He's had a great year, but he's not known for yards after catch. Adam Humphries is negligible in that category.
Is he?
Rate's okay. You know, he's not Travis Kelce.
Well, this,
it's
interesting that
yards after catch, keep your eye on that in terms of what the Bucs are looking for at that position, Steve.
Well, it's interesting you mention that because, you know, I listen to all these Buccaneers radio network shows, no matter how boring they are. I do get through them all. Not all of them are boring. But when the tight ends coach was on this year, he talked about the number one thing that they work on with Brait as a major focus is yards after the catch, because his yards after the catch are not good.
And they know he's going to catch the ball.
And
that's
they know he's going to catch. And if you think about it, does Rate really do anything after the catch? No. Now, he makes the tough catch in tight quarters or in the end zone.
And there's a lot to be said about that.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but that's not his game. And this plays to what Lee's talking about and the overall talent at receiver. They don't have a guy who can break away and run across the middle. They don't have those players.
Lee, didn't Cutter say something about a guy who can take a 10-yard pass and make it 30 yards? Did he not say that?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, we don't have those players. Doug Martin had a couple of those out of the backfield this year. So did Charles Sims. So did Jaquizz Rodgers. But they're hardly Darren's.
He's big on explosive plays, Lee. He talks about them all the time.
Yeah, he talks about them.
And they didn't have a lot of them this year, Steve.
He talks about that damn near as much as Lovey talked about takeaways.
Now, I got a guy in mind, and I know this is reaching for the moon, because boy, every team wishes they had this guy.
Reach, baby.
Could they come? You know, they don't come along very often. Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill can return kicks.
Sure, they need.
You
a
can
guy
throw
like that.
Him a 10-yard pass. He's the guy that they need. He's the guy that, now he's the fastest guy in the NFL. He's the fastest guy I've seen in years.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, he's incredible. Can you imagine him with a Cutter screen pass? Cutter's very good on the screen passes. He didn't throw enough, in my opinion, this year. I thought they were very effective. Last year, they were tremendous.
Well, Hill's
effective.
Not available or anything like that.
I understand it, but I mean a guy in that mold. Now, Everybody wants that. Everybody wants that. But what I'm saying is, this receiver that everybody's pining for, and I'm not going to argue that they don't need that number two guy, he doesn't have to be 6'3".
No.
Mike Evans takes care of that, Steve, but he's got to be quick, and he's got to be dangerous, and he's got to stretch the field.
The field is key right there. Stretch the field. Evans doesn't stretch the field. Adam Humphries sure doesn't. Adam Humphries is a stereotypical number three possession.
And a very good one. And a very good one.
He's warming me over. I've said this months ago. I always catch hell when I sort of mock Humphries, but it's now I'm starting to see the light.
You know, is he Wes Welker? No, he's not Wes Welker.
No, but you know what? I will say this, and I should have.
I think he can be an effective player.
I should have caught this earlier, and I didn't, and that's dumb me. I should have done the simple math, but I'm not a mathematician by far. But when he was concussed in San Diego, that passing game slipped, even though they had the Freddie Martinos. By the way, you know, Freddie Martino, I think he took his band back to Vero Beach because they're APB out on him. After that Chicago game, have you seen him or heard of him?
Absolutely.
He's invisible.
Well, they threw four passes to him in San Diego. Maybe you're talking about San Diego, and then they didn't
really
play him.
But he caught a touchdown pass against the Bears.
Was it?
Yeah, he caught a touchdown pass against the Bears. Steve, he's invisible after that. But yeah,
here's what Buck fans are going to fantasize about, other than Rachel Watson. I got you covered.
Good one-liner, Ira. Oh, that was quick.
This is the thought process. If you add the right piece, and he turns out to be correct, either in free agency or the draft, to the core of Mike Evans, Humphreys in his proper number three spot, and Brait, that has a chance to be a potent attack around Jameis
Winston.
Well,
sure. I mean, this is what's going to be fun about the Ira Kaufman podcast heading into the offseason. And through the offseason, we'll be doing this every Tuesday and Thursday. So many angles we can explore. It's going to be so much fun. And we still have so much to talk about today. But
think about how much more effective Brayton Evans can be with another guy in the mix.
I'll say this. If it's me, as I say this at One Buck Palace where we sit on January 2nd, if it's me, without looking at a draft board, just assuming you have your pick of a good position player you want anywhere.
You're talking about needs.
I'm talking about if your draft need is there. We're playing fantasy football here, okay? If it's me and I see the receiver I want at number 19, a first-round pick, a true legit number 19 overall receiver, I take him. I think it's a no-freaking-brainer.
And you don't look back.
Make the whole offense better. You don't have to worry about Mike Evans getting hurt. You can have a 1 and a 1A. The kid's got a great wide receivers coach in Todd Monken. I think we can all agree that. Mm-hmm. And why not put him in a spot where you've got an elite young receiver who's fixed his work ethic and focus and a great coach and Jameis. Let Jameis groom with this guy.
An emerging tight end.
And it's going to open up the whole damn field. I would just go for it right there. But the problem is you can't wait to the draft because you got to buy this guy in free agency because you can't roll the dice.
Now, here's what's interesting, and this is the beauty of Joe Buck's, our readers at joebucksfan.com. I can't remember what story I wrote Saturday.
I can't remember what you ate yesterday.
Well,
Lee.
No. That's the particular. I know what I wrote Saturday, but I don't know if this applies. But there was a particular story I wrote Saturday where, you know, I think it was about Mike Smith. And it originally got like 30 comments. Okay, that means there was people reading it. And I log off the site for a couple hours to watch some football. And I log on back on about 6 o'clock at night. And there's 100 comments. What's going on here? And it was a WrestleMania. It was a WrestleMania type thing that got people going crazy. Leonard Fournette or Dalvin Cook, the Bucs should draft. Because obviously they're going to need a running back. And so would a running back open up the passing game? Because if you have a threat at running back, does that open up the passing
game? Well, like Steve just intimated, it much depends on how free agency goes. No question about it.
You know, and it's the wonderful ring around the rosy of the NFL at running backs because – you know, there are guys in free agency and low round picks are top running backs, not just okay running backs,
yes,
elite running backs all the time. So it's fun. Two topics I want to throw at you, Ira, because they're important here on the Ira Kaufman podcast presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac.
And by the way, Steve, should we mention that even though the holidays may have passed, the deals that Ed Morris have not?
Well, of course not, and it's January. All new deals coming down the line for 2017, and as always this time of year on 2016 models. But you can get really up to the second everything you might need at EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com and EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. Two things, Ira. One, Adam Humphreys, my 2 cents, just a quick 2 cents. For a walk-on tryout 23-year-old receiver from Clemson who people thought when he got here was a trainer, the guy's been phenomenal. Is he a nice complimentary number 4 overall receiver on a good team? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he is.
But let's not blow him out of proportion, which I think some people like to do.
He finished strong, Steve. He finished strong.
Had a good year. He's great for where he was, for who he is, period. You know, we'll see. But that's why a lot of fans were pining in the draft last year for Sterling Shepard, the gem of the Giants this year, a guy many people wanted that we wrote about getting instead of Aguayo, who was taken, I think, the one pick after, or one pick before.
And had a very nice rookie season.
Oh, phenomenal rookie year, and he's going to the playoffs and fit in very well and a versatile guy. Dirk Cutter. And Shepard had 8 touchdowns, as well as fantasy players know everywhere.
That's playing with Beckham, too. That's right.
In the complimentary role. Anyway, Ira, Dirk Cutter, One Buck Palace. You watched his State of the Bucks farewell press conference, chit-chat, got a little testy and feisty. But your perceptions as a sage NFL observer for the last 59 and a half years, what did you think of Cutter and it today in his address, as well as the overall job of Cutter, 9-7 with this bunch?
You know what? Here's how I'm going to evaluate Cutter. By going right to the source, the players. And a year ago, when you heard them talk about Lovie Smith, and this was before Lovie Smith was dismissed, you didn't hear a lot of enthusiasm in their voice.
No.
Vis-a-vis Lovie Smith. Now, I've talked to about 10 different players about Dirk Cutter's first season as a head coach. And they give him a lot of credit. And this is going to be a big topic for me on Joe Bucks Fan in the next month, along with the John Lynch stuff, is how tight this team was. I think chemistry was very big for this team. And I got the sense that they played for each other. And a lot of these players, Lee, gave Cutter a lot of credit for fostering that kind of camaraderie. He did it in his own way. He did it in his own way because of his honesty. He was blunt. He told you what he wanted. He had team-building activities. Now, you know, most of it comes from the players, Lee. I'm not going to give Cutter all the credit for being a tight-knit bunch. But he played a part, Lee, and I think it's one of the unsung aspects of Dirk Cutter's first season in Tampa. Other than his skills as a play caller, which are considerable, the players like playing for this guy, Lee, and that goes a long way.
Oh, yeah, and the same with Mike Smith. They love Mike Smith.
Yes.
You were there when McCoy was talking.
Yes.
I think you were there when he was talking about the basketball goal.
Yes.
And our listeners are like, what are you talking about? Well, most football coaches, they just have this, it's in their DNA. It's football, football, football.
They don't
football.
Want any distractions.
Yeah, I mean, going to the doctor for a cold is a distraction. Everything's a distraction. Well, McCoy, you know, Cutter was talking to McCoy about how he could build, what's the term you used?
Chemistry.
Team chemistry.
Esprit de corps.
Camaraderie.
Camaraderie. And
you can't spell that, Isbits, but I can say it.
Yes,
camaraderie.
Okay.
And Gerald McCoy said, you know what? The players need a break. When they're doing football all day long, they need a mental break. He said, put a basketball goal up in the locker room. And we've seen that there for, you know, how many months. And McCoy just raved about how something that little...
He couldn't stop talking about it, Steve.
He talked about it for like 15 minutes, didn't he?
Yeah.
He said, just something as little as that. He said, you won't believe how much mentally that helped the players out. They got a mental break. And they were like little kids when they
and Cutter didn't mind it.
Yeah, Cutter didn't mind when they came in the locker room. They were like little kids. He said, "You can't believe that." But here's something that I thought was very interesting. Talk about clash of cultures, Lovie, Dirk Cutter. I was talking to Ali Marpet today, and I said, "You know, last year, you know,
I saw you had him corralled over
there.
Yeah,
you had a busted up ankle. You battled through some injuries, missed a couple games." And I said, I don't recall you missing a snap. He goes, no. He goes, Donovan Smith and I did not miss a snap. He goes, and that's because of Cutter. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? He said, the way Cutter worked OTAs and training camp to save their bodies, and that was a big thing this past summer. You know, Cutter was wanting to save their bodies. He being Ali Marpet, said, I am convinced that is why I didn't have an injury, because Cutter was so concerned about saving our bodies through the latter part of the season by having easier training camps.
Ira, I've got to give Dirk Cutter an A++ for brainwashing. Okay. Unbelievable.
Listen to you.
Because he had him brainwashed back then. Oh, Dirk's taking great care of us, and, you know, we're going light, and we're finishing 10 minutes early, and we're not practicing in the middle of the day, like Lovie insisted. You know what these old Bucks and players and teams used to go through. 2 days, 3 days, doesn't mean they were all perfect. But we saw some damn incredible quality football. Guys playing full seasons, no big deal. Long before Dirk Cutter, you know, was was endorsing basketball and massages and bowling outings.
Nisbets loves to come in and prick our balloon,
but
doesn't
he? I think it's great. This is the Kemper, but this is Cutter's whole. This was the goal, was to give the players that confidence that, hey, coach is taking care of us. Coach loves us.
Yes.
Goes to the family theme of Jameis and everything else. So if Ali Marpet,
so we're going to buy in.
If Ali Marpet wants to believe that in week 15, having a lighter day in April helped him out, God bless
the
him.
The truth doesn't matter.
Truth See? Doesn't matter. Exactly.
Truth doesn't matter.
So brainwashing A-plus for Dirk Cutter, and that's just fantastic.
He also handled himself pretty well this year, Steve. Can he be thin-skinned on occasion at that podium? I said that in week 3. And he finished off the year in style. Not combative, but, you know, he wouldn't mind pushing back.
I find honesty refreshing.
And anybody who fights with Roy Cummings, that's not a bad thing over there.
Not combative? He told him to shut up. What do you want him to do, hit him with a hammer? You
know? Roy probably deserved it at that point, because he wouldn't let him finish the sentence.
Cutter was trying to get a word in.
But he likes to take on the media a little bit, Steve, but I don't think he does it over the top. I can handle it. You guys might not be able to handle it because you guys bristle at the
you
slightest.
Have no idea.
You have
Let's
no idea.
Let's just leave it at that.
But look, he bottom line, he was 9-7, Steve. He was 9-7. He won 6 out of the last 8 games, gentlemen. That's just the way it is. He won 6 out of the last 8 games this year when they could have folded their tents. And they, you know what? I thought they played with some passion. They didn't play particularly well against the Panthers, but guys were running around. It looked like they were enthused, and I didn't really get that sense from the Panthers that they really wanted to be out there. So I'll give Cutter that much credit.
I'm going to give a shout-out to one of our colleagues at JoeBucksFan.com, the great commish, Justin Pulowski.
There you go.
He put this out on Twitter.
You mean the man whose podcast I'm out to topple one
Yeah, you two
days?
Guys. By the way, he is open-minded, and you brought this up before. He wants to have a sit down with you and do a co-podcast.
I believe I believe Mr. Isbitz will arrange that.
I'll talk to your agent.
Perhaps over a Knish or something.
There you go.
It's going to be interesting.
A Knish, that sounds good.
So you're talking about Pulowski.
Yeah, well, Pulowski put this on Twitter, and he has like 10th row behind the Bucks seats. And he had a video that I thought was really interesting. It showed Jameis basically on his knees and had the rapt attention of every offensive lineman. Although offensive linemen were sitting together in positions, you know, Smith,
left to right.
Panfield, left to right. And Jameis is on his knees, and he's pleading with everyone. This is going on for minutes at a time. He's looking them right in the eye, pleading with them, and every one of them, their eyes were locked in on Jameis. He had them just, I mean, you can see Jameis is just a natural-born leader. And Jameis was passionate. You've seen that video. It was up there this morning. Well, anyway, Pulowski put this on Twitter during the game, and on Twitter, and Steve can attest to this, you probably get the same thing. I mean, you're getting hundreds of messages a half, so you can't see all of them. So I missed Justin's initial one, but he said that he saw Mike Evans. Now, Mike Evans looked rusty to me early in the game, and I even said, hey, someone better tell Evans it's 2017, not 2015. Had a couple drops early in the game, and I was like, whoa, and it was just, he didn't look like the same Mike Evans. Well, Pulowski said he saw after the first series, Evans come to the sideline, get an IV. And that wasn't the first one. And Pulowski, you know, pondered, is he sick? And, well, we know there's a bug going through this building the last couple weeks. Cutter was struggling yesterday at the podium. He was sniffling really bad. And so I put two and two together. And Pulowski saw him getting an IV. After the first offense, I've never heard of that before. First offensive series, getting an IV. He did not look good.
And it wasn't overly hot.
It was 85 degrees maybe. And so it very well could be he was under the weather. It very well could be.
All right, Ira, before we wrap up, two things. We're going to hit two important topics, both quick, before we bail out, and then our next podcast will be on Thursday. First, I don't think it's fair to say for a second that the Panthers look disinterested. Jonathan Stewart was running like a bulldog, barreling people over. He dragged Keith Tandy like 8 yards on one play, and he was running very, very hard. They came out and executed a beautiful opening drive.
And then they fell asleep.
And they had some turnovers. They missed, what, 3 field goals? You know, they had some bad breaks, and they played tough to the end. You know, they didn't lay down. They stormed back. I can't go there. I thought the Panthers played a lot like they played all year long.
Including Newton. Lousy.
Well, the Panthers, I don't think they laid down, though. They didn't lay down.
The Panthers were one play away from winning that game.
Yeah, I thought the Bucks played a little more passionate than the Panthers.
I got you. Okay. I got to smack you.
I understand.
All right, now. Everyone is waiting to hear, everyone on this damn podcast.
Oh, I knew this is coming up.
The Ira Kaufman podcast presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, 70 years of Ed Morris, edmorriscadillactampa.com and edmorriscadillacbrandon.com. Roberto Aguayo, Ira, the guy struggled in August. The guy struggled in the middle of the year. The guy dropped a deuce all over the home turf in the finale. Okay, that's a lot of people say rookie kickers, oh, they struggle, they straighten out. Like Janikowski straightened out after like week 7. We didn't see Aguayo look like a good NFL kicker. And if he was anybody else, he wouldn't be here next year. We all know that. What's your take on this situation?
You're gonna get your wish next year, Isbits, because you've been carping about this, and you haven't been wrong in terms of competition. Three words to Roberto Aguayo. Three simple words, and you love it when I put it like that. Watch your back. Watch your back. And by that I mean, Lee, and I don't think I'm taking a leap of faith here, if he has a lousy training camp, he may not make it to September.
Mm.
In the words of Dirk Cutter, they are not above cutting a high draft pick and playing a walk-on.
Well, Steve, they did that with ASJ.
Steve, when you come off a 9-7 season, everybody, and that includes Jason Light, who made the decision ultimately to move up and draft Aguayo, everybody, including Light, realizes you are poised for takeoff. And if anybody is holding you back, they got to be history, because everybody's watching you. Buck fans, but number one, everybody in that locker room. You can't make an exception for Aguayo. He better have a good training camp, Lee, or I don't think he makes it through the season.
Interesting.
I'm putting
it
right out there.
I'm glad you got it.
There's going to be competition in training camp, Lee. There's going to be competition.
Well, at the very least, don't they bring scrubs in?
I'm not talking about scrubs. I think they want somebody to push this guy.
I think they'll see a legitimate kicker in camp as well. Doesn't mean Aguayo won't be poised to win the job. But here's what I want to say, Ira, on this. And you can tell me what you think, Lee, as well. The Buccaneers, when Aguayo was struggling in August, I'm going to write about this eventually, but when he was struggling in August, the coaches made it very clear, it's all mental. We don't need to coach him. I'm not a kicking guru. There's no one who's going to fix his mechanics. This is all mental, and he'll work it out. So they made it very clear, and Cutter later made it clear, there's nothing we can do to fix Aguayo. It's just in his head. So if you're a coaching staff, teachers, and you basically have admitted, it's not technical. So what are they going to do? Just cross their fingers and wait?
Cutter wants somebody reliable. If he doesn't feel Aguayo's reliable, he's going to march into Light's office, and Light's not going to have much of a defense.
It's a tough spot when you can't coach up a guy. You know, an ASJ, if he had a rough first year, any rookie, rough first year, you can coach him up. They've already said, we don't know how to coach up Aguayo. We just got to hope he gets it straight in his
head.
Well,
what's interesting to me, you know, hearing that, and I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, it was last week. Cutter is St. Louis Friday, I think it was. Cutter's like, hey, Aguayo's kicking 58-yarders in practice.
Yeah.
Which is it?
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, that's a great point. That's further proof that it's mental. If he's drilling them in practice, but he gets up there and,
gags,
then that it is mental and you can't fix it. It's a great storyline for this offseason. I don't put the Bucs past signing a kicker for the veteran minimum and let him slug it out.
They have the cash.
Let him slug it out.
I think you got a little bit of a slide this year, Steve. I think you'd agree with me in terms of accountability, and I don't think that's going to happen the second time around.
There was about a six-week period there, although he didn't kick any long ones. There was a six-week period there. He was pretty solid for about 6 weeks.
Yes.
Yeah, he was I know you love the data, Ira, before we wrap up. He was a little bit better than the NFL average in extra points. A little bit better than average. So can't knock him there, but 40 yards plus. He was 36%, and that includes 40 and 50 yards.
36 yards?
40 yards plus. 40 yards, okay. 36%.
That's
by far the –
I'm not used to Isbits doing original research.
That's your rock bottom in the NFL, and I trust me, anybody close to that this year in the NFL is going to have a new job.
They're bartending.
Steve, I know we want to wrap this up, but there's a topic we haven't gotten to. I'm going to do it quickly. And a lot of Buck fans who are on my Twitter account it blew up yesterday, Steve, I want to set the record straight.
Yeah, set it straight.
I want to set it straight. I sent out a tweet before the game that Ed Glazer and Jason Light are standing there on the sidelines engaged in an animated conversation. That is all I said. I put a period after it. I didn't try to guess what they were talking about. My vantage point was the press box with a pair of binoculars. I know who Ed Glazer looks like. And he had a hat on, and I still recognized him. So all of a sudden, Steve, you know, people are accusing me of clickbait and throwing things out. Can you be any more vague, Kaufman? We need further explanation. Let me explain one thing. I was not privy to the conversation. I reported what I saw. The word animated has set these people off. All it means is Ed Glazer was gesticulating. He had a lot of passion.
Dramatic.
Dramatic. And Jason Light had his arms folded, and he was listening to him. And he was, obviously, he wasn't talking about getting rid of Dirk Cutter or getting rid of Jason Light or maybe, you know, getting rid of
Jameis.
Jameis Winston or Mike Smith. It was an animated conversation. Ed Glazer made the trip from California. He wanted to see the finale, and it was animated, and I stand by it. I saw it, and I reported it.
Can I add my Twitter?
Yeah, real quick.
All right, two Twitter things that I got yesterday.
You guys got to get me off the hook with this.
Well, here's one.
They're off the hook. They didn't do anything.
The stuff we get, Steve and I get during a game is just, it's out there. Let's just say that. But my two favorites yesterday, it was so good I had to write about it. So good, or so bad they were so good. One guy said, if Winston has a bad year in 2017, Bucks will wash their hands up.
Oh, boy.
I'm willing to bet my house that's not going to happen. Boy. Number one. The second one was a guy said, Kwon Alexander has to work on his tackling. Mind you, this is the same guy who finished the season with the NFL lead in solo tackles.
That's outstanding.
So he needs to work on his tackling. You know, he led the league in solo tackles.
All right, and that's one guy we will talk about on the next podcast, Kwon Alexander, Ira, the Ira Kaufman podcast, presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Just another gem of a podcast, Ira. You nailed it.
Look out, Pulowski. Look out.